Hello and welcome to Twin Peaks Investing. This is Peter Higgins. I'm at Conkers3 on Twitter, and I'm with my ably assisted friend, Peter at Wheelie Dealer even out on Twitter. Hi Pete, how are you today?
Yeah, not bad, mate.
Good, good, good. Right, Pete, I want to go straight into this with regards to the topics we want to talk about today. We've had lots of to-ing and fro-ing and people with different views and different thoughts about the severity or the importance of what's been going on regarding the coronavirus or COVID-19 as another name it's been given. And obviously it's impacting quite a lot of stocks. We've had a few profit warnings and, you know, I'm not quite sure where we're at with it all in a sense of the numbers at the moment. But I know that we were saying on the last podcast that, and we advise people really to have a look in their portfolios as to which stocks they hold that might be impacted on the supply chain from China and elsewhere, and to look into their portfolios a little bit more.
Yeah, and to get a sense what you're holding that may be impacted. I mean, it is so difficult to know. I mean, one of the things I heard today was that there's something like 212 cases in South Korea. So it's obviously getting out of China now in a slightly bigger way. But I mean, still 212 cases is absolutely nothing in the big scheme of things. And when you look at it in the West, it seems pretty well controlled still. You know, there doesn't seem to be much more of an outbreak here, and certainly not, I haven't heard hardly anything in America or anything like that. So it is still very unclear, and it was Apple, wasn't it, that came out and said it was going to affect them, and I've seen some other stocks that have said, you know, we may have issues with it, but we're not really sure, and it is all very sort of fuzzy and unclear, isn't it?
It is. I mean, we've had there's a couple of companies that have mentioned it in their earning transcripts, and I'll go through a couple so you listeners can have a think of any companies that are related to these companies, etc. So in America, you've had Apple, Max Linear, Emcor, Sony, Qualcomm, Emerson, Motorola, Seagate, Nokia, Gilead, Illumina, Stryker, you know, Starbucks, Levi's, Ralph Lauren, Colgate Palmolive, you know, L'Oreal.
A lot of big
companies. So if their supply chains are impacted, the smaller companies that are in that space could be impacted. The finance companies, even Visa and MasterCard, are impacted because less people going out buying stuff and having and making transactions. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, out of those, I mean, I don't take much notice of the American market. I mean, to be honest with you, it's enough to be, you know, worrying about the UK market. How many out of those were really proper full-on profit warnings? Or were they more a case of, oh, there's this virus thing and we might be affected by it and we don't know how much? Was there much of that going on?
They were plus and minus, Pete. Some were saying we're fine. You know, some were saying we're not impacted. Some were saying they were impacted. I mean, closer to home and more globally, you had the mining company, which one was it now? I think it was Glencore, Pete, that came out. And they were saying earlier in the week that they reported their first annual loss in 5 years, and that was due invariably to the impact of and slowdown and use of their materials. You know, for the first time in 5 years, you know what I mean, caused a big impairment for them. So you know,
but then we're back to that usual thing of is that really caused by the virus, or is it caused by a slowdown that was coming in China anyway?
Potentially.
Yeah. It's so difficult to tell. I mean, like I sort of been saying all along, what I'm tending to do is just look and see what the indexes are telling us. And at the moment, you know, okay, we're having a bit of a pullback. I mean, we're recording this on Friday, the 21st of February, and it's about 6 o'clock at night now. At the time of recording, we were having a bit of a pullback on the American markets, and the FTSE 100 have been pretty weak today. And there was a bit of weakness around yesterday on Thursday. But apart from that, I mean, US markets are right up near all-time highs and have been making all-time highs yet again, you know. So we're only just slightly off the highs. And, you know, that's really bullish behavior. So whether the dip yesterday and today is going to become a bigger dip next week or something, when the reality of the virus suddenly smacks everyone or something like that. Who knows? You know, it just hasn't been like that so far, has it? The markets have stayed remarkably bullish.
They have. And when a company has come out and said something positive about it, in a sense of, you know, there's a company called Trix Group, Kettle Switches, yeah? So their ticker
symbol is
K-E-T-L.
Straight.
And they came out on the 19th and said, we see minimal impact for our company regarding China. And their share price zoomed up from the morning of 172 all the way up beyond almost to 190. So they had a nice pop because we're saying, no, we're going to be fine. And equally, some of the companies have done the same, but some of them have given back that some of that rise as well. So, yeah, there's a lot out there. But the thing I want to talk about, Pete, was there was a company last year, share price, okay? There's been lots of talk about 100 baggers. You've seen it on Twitter, lots of people talking about 100 baggers, okay?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
There was a French company, ticker symbol NCYT, whose share price was 4 pence per share in October.
That's Novacyt, isn't it?
Novacyt, okay. Yeah. So we've had lots and lots and lots of people ramping the whatever out of it, okay?
The bejesus.
Yes.
Ramping the bejesus.
Let's be polite about
That's
it.
That's the official term, ramping the bejesus.
Term of it, okay. So it's 4 pence in October, yeah. Ended 2019 at 13 pence per share, okay. And there was no trades on the last trading day of that stock at 13 pence on December 31st, okay?
And if I'm right, that's a company that's developing some sort of drugs, probably never made any sales, probably never made any profit, yeah?
Minimal stuff, mate. It's there. Yeah. And so it's there. Obviously, the noise about the and the stories and the articles are going out about the Nova virus, okay? 31st, Pete, of January... Yeah, Novacyt shares jumped 32% on launch of a coronavirus test.
Okay? A test, yeah.
The headline was, Novacyt has launched a diagnostic test for a new strain of coronavirus which originated in Wuhan and has spread worldwide, leading the World Health Organization to declare it a global health emergency. So that was the 31st of January 2020. Okay.
Yeah.
And shares... at that stage, volume from zero on the 31st of December.
It's a crazy
to 14.1 million shares traded, okay? And the shares closed at 38 pence. Since then, the shares have hit a high on the 17th, that's this week, the 17th of February, okay?
Yeah.
Of £2.22, 0.9 pence, okay? And they close at £1.66 on the 17th, okay. This is what I'm talking about. Hype, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So they,
everybody
they,
jumping on the bandwagon. Everybody wanting a piece of the next big thing, and so on and so forth. Granted,
and they just basically everyone's just bundled in and they've shot up.
Bundled in, yeah.
Yeah.
So on the 17th, it hits £2.22.9. On the 20th, yesterday's date, it's at 60.75. Right, so it's cratered enormously.
Still, so the people paying £2.20 have lost two-thirds of their money in days.
And more.
Yeah.
And today, on No News, it's jumped up 61% to finish at 105. So we talk about roller coasters, and we talk about rides, and we talk about volatility. If you want to sleep at night, that is not a stock for you to invest in. If you're a trader that is, you know, is used to wandering around the streets and wandering around your office and wandering around your trading room with a neck brace on, Novacyt's a stock for you. You know, so anybody that wanted a 50 bagger and more could have had one if they knew anything about Novacyt back in October. They could have had a 5 bagger, nearly 6 bagger, if they knew what it was or got involved in it on the 31st. Of January, which is only what, 3 weeks ago. So where will it go from here? I haven't got a Scooby-Doo.
It's like you said, it's the classic thing where if you're an experienced trader and you do this kind of thing all the time, you might have nabbed a you know, a decent percentage profit out of that. And there will be a lot of people who've managed that. But the majority of people will be fairly inexperienced or you know, whatever. And they'll have lost a load of money. You can be pretty certain.
Absolutely. They would have lost a lot of money, Pete. I mean, the market cap, even though it's gone up, you know, 25-fold, you know, at its peak, the market cap's just dropped back down to sub 35 mil. Yeah. And got a little bit of turnover. I suspect a lot of that's grants wise, but it's never made a profit.
Yeah.
So where it'll go from here, I don't know. But
the thing is, we don't even know the efficacy, the usefulness of this so-called test. It might be that it's actually not a test at all and not useful in any way. In which case, the company's not worth 35 million. It's probably not even worth 350,000 quid. You know, that's part of the problem, isn't it?
That's part of the problem. I don't know the truth of it, Pete.
I don't know anything about it.
I just wanted to share that with people regarding volatility and jumping on bandwagons, that you have to be ready for, you know, when this is going, you know, off like a rocket upwards, the same sort of speed it goes up, sometimes it can come down. And I had this with the Ebola incident many, many years ago, when lots of stocks from all over the place were going up 50, 100% per day, only to come all the way back down to diddly squat when they, you know, when the Ebola virus was dealt with on that occasion.
And they can move in minutes. I mean, yeah, they can do ridiculous movement. It throws up two quite simple things to think about, really. One of them is, if you're going to play with stocks like this, only put a small bit of your portfolio in it. You know, if you know it's a bit of a gamble, it's a bit of a risk, you're having a bit of a laugh with it, just put less than 5% of your portfolio in, you know, keep it sensible. The other thing that it throws up is the classic, you know, if you stick to valuation discipline, you know, you're looking for things that are making profit and are at a sensible valuation, or you're looking for things that are nearly into profit and you can see that profit, you know, next year or the year after, fair enough. But if you're just like basically gambling on stuff that's never made any money, and chances are might never ever make any money, or then again it might be amazing, who knows, you know, it's just gambling, you're not investing. It's a joke to call it investing. It's really not investing.
I agree with you, Pete. I mean, we've had equally some volatility in a stock that I own, which hasn't made much money yet, if anything, and that was ITM Power, you know, the hydrogen one we spoke about.
And
that's been on a absolutely ridiculous run for the past probably since October, when Lind, which is now a £118 billion company, invested in the stock at 40 pence, invested £38 million into the stock, and since then it's just gone off like a rocket equally.
Yeah.
And their turnover is minimal, you know, loss-making company in the hydrogen space, looking to build the infrastructure, looking to provide all of the tech for hydrogen-related cars and automation going forward. But, you know, that's got a market cap at the moment, Pete, of 685 mil. Ooh. You know what I mean? For a loss-making company.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's just staggeringly high.
It's good that Linda showed a lot of good interest in it at 40 million quid or whatever they put into it, but you know, there's still a lot of uncertainty, isn't there?
Absolutely. I mean, I purchased that back in 2014, Pete, at 23 pence.
Yeah, I remember you having it. Yeah,
it went up, it went down, it went up, it went down, and you know, I bought some on the lows, I trimmed some on the highs, you know what I mean? But I never called the bottom, I never called the top, and then you know, the last 6 months or so, it's just gone crazy because everybody's jumped onto it, you know, and the others as well, the other hydrogen related stocks. But if they've bought into it in the last 2 weeks or 3 weeks, they've been hit around the head with it, because a lot of the stocks have gone lower, you know, by 15-20% in the past 2 weeks, you know, because everyone that had a bit of profit's taken it off, and because the momentum's dropping, all the momentum traders are jumping off it as well. So that's the risk of jumping into a stock too late. You know, and in my case, I jumped in too early, almost 5 years too early. You know what I mean? You know, you have to be careful. No one calls this thing right, you know.
In a way, it's, I think for me myself, I'd rather be in a good stock early if it was pretty likely it was going to make me money than buy into it too late. You know, of the choice of the two evils, I'd have that in too early and have to wait a bit. I'd far happier have that.
I'm the same, Pete, and I don't mind being contrarian. You know, when people are selling stuff, or having a pop at a stock and saying this is rubbish, that's often the times when I'm thinking, okay, it might be at the, you know, capitulation phase, you know, where people are saying something about the stock. It might be time to have a look underneath the bonnet to see what the sum of parts actually comes to. You know, if there's value there, then sometimes the time to buy is when no one else wants it. I don't want to buy the stock when everybody wants the stock, Pete.
Yeah, it's too late then, isn't it?
You know, if the stock's up 4 or 5, you know, in the case of Novasit, up 15-fold, I'm not interested in the stock.
Yeah, it's too late. It's interesting. It's about taking a portfolio approach, because if you run a portfolio with a load of good stocks in it, a load of potential stocks in it, whatever, you know, you can sit on a few that aren't doing much at a particular point in time, because other ones in your portfolio will be doing okay. So that will keep the whole portfolio marching onwards, you know, marching upwards the way you want it to be going. And that, you know, at some point in time, those stocks that haven't done much that you've had to be patient with, they'll have their moment in the sun, and they'll be the ones that suddenly become big winners for you.
That is possible. I mean, you spoke about the 5%, and I've got this habit of and this strategy of.
You sure you want to tell us about your habit, mate? You know what I mean? There's certain things on the podcast that we've said we shouldn't really discuss.
No.
We shouldn't discuss in public.
This is a bit about my little bit of juice.
A little what?
Bit of juice that I keep in my portfolio, in a sense of having 5 to 10% of my entire portfolio for trading, on the rare occasions that I trade. So you know, 5 to 10% of the portfolio. The rest of the 90% is in medium to long term holdings. And as you know, similar to yourself, Pete, I keep an income part of that portfolio as well.
Stuff
that's got a nice yield that just sleeps there and generates
nice boring stuff.
10 to 15% for me per year, which is lovely. But for that 5 to 10% that I will utilize if necessary for hot stocks, higher risk stocks, often I don't really talk about them on Twitter either. I'm looking to generate 50 to 100 or more percent in those stocks. Because they're that risky.
And you probably do that. I mean, you're very good at picking things like ITM and making flipping big wins on them. You're really very good at that. And you seem to get that very well.
Well, that's because there's so much stuff out there, Pete. You might find 1 out of 100 that makes that risk worthwhile to take.
Yeah.
And invariably, out of those risks that you do take, you might get 1 out of 5 right. But it's about keeping that loss to the absolute minimum. And when you get that stock right, riding it as best you can to get the maximum amount of win out of it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so you're controlling your loss because you're only having, 5% of your portfolio in those kind of stocks anyway. And then you've got several stocks within that 5%. So you're controlling the downside risk. And then, as you say, you let them run for as long as you think you can, and you know you don't get out of them until you really think you've pretty much squeezed all you're going to sensibly get without taking on far too much silly risk.
Absolutely. So you can trim some off the top when you
trim a bit. Yeah.
When you see another wave of investors coming in who are coming in quite late, and you've been in there quite early, you can trim. It doesn't sit well with people when you're one of the people that were in there early. And you're trimming some stock. What the hell are you doing? No, I'm just buying on you. But I like to do my buying when no one else is around, when no one else is interested. And I like to do my selling when everyone's interested. You know what I mean? And it's no disrespect to anybody else. It's just the way that I like to do things, because no one else wants to buy it when I want to buy it, which is absolutely fine, because I'm taking higher risk on that trading element of my stocks.
It's the feed the ducks when they're quacking one, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, because sometimes you can't feed the ducks because they're not eating anything. You know, they don't want it. You know, they've had so much bread over the last few months, you know. So your chunks of mother's pride aren't going to do the business. So you know, you've got to wait until the last lot of Hovis and whatever it is and Warburton's has got other bread makes are available. And I'm sure I'll think of those in a short while as well. But once all the panini sticks are gone down inside them, you know, then they're ready to take on your next dose of sunblessed.
Absolutely.
That was very good, wasn't it? That was very good. Very quality.
Good use of bread
that was
analogies
quality
there,
podcast humour there, wasn't it? Something like that.
Brilliant.
Mate, it's funny actually because I think generally speaking, I wouldn't sort of categorise myself as having much of a gambling streak. But I know that a lot of people do have this sort of like higher risk side. But when I think about it, higher risk gambling perversion is really around what I do with spread bets. So what I do there, it's like, so I got an example actually from what I did this week where I've got a long-term hold forever kind of position on an income stock on National Grid, NG dot. And, so I've got that one. I'm going to hold it forever anyway. Do you know what I mean? Okay, at some point I might sell it. But it's one that pays a nice dividend. It's pretty boring, blah, blah, blah. But the thing is, what I ideally try to do is try to do spread bets around those as well. So if and when I see they're low, because I hold it as a stock I've got, I sort of tend to notice it because I hold it anyway. When it's sort of low, I want to be buying some as a long spread bet. And then when it's higher, I want to be selling it as a long spread bet. And so basically, I don't know, I've had to be incredibly patient with this one and it hasn't worked out particularly well. It's taken a long time. But National Grid did jump up a lot recently. It's had a very strong run up since the election, really, with the whole Corbyn risk going sort of thing because of the nationalisation ideas. So I managed to sell it. So I sold my spread bet position the other day and did okay because I made, well, it's only 10% on the exposure, so it wasn't much of a gain in terms of sort of like the raw share price. But because it's a leveraged trade, I actually made 50% on my money. That is quite nice, really. So, you know, it's really, I see that as a sort of fairly low risk way to sort of trade a bit, if you see what I mean.
Nice trade, mate.
Yeah, it worked. I mean, obviously my other perversion around that is around doing index trades. And I've got a long running on the S&P 500, which obviously with the weakness of the last couple of days, I'm sort of thinking, are we coming towards the end of the run and should I be closing it? But I'm not going to make any snap decisions just yet. I'll be looking at it closely over the weekend and obviously into next week.
Okie dokie. Well, on that note, Pete, talking about a nice little pop and on a slow eddy sort of stock, right? There was a stock today... Lord Lee favorite, yeah.
Oh yeah.
Dejan Holdings. Did you see that this morning?
Oh yeah, DGAN. Yeah.
Nice pop, mate. So it's had an offer of £80.50 cash per share, right? A premium of 56% for a sleepy little, you know, holding
Incredible.
Company, which is essentially a property company. So someone's taking it private.
Yeah.
And it's got lots of properties around the world, but also around the Marble Arch, which is sitting on the portfolio for a discount to assets. And someone's gone, right, okay, we'll have that. You know what I mean?
I mean, that's what you say. It's a classic thing where I believe they're very focused on London property.
Yes.
And it's... You know, it's very, very sought after. I mean, if you think about it, in terms of legal system and ownership rights and lack of corruption, well, that's a bit of a joke, lack of corruption, but hey, we'll say lack of corruption for argument's sake. You know, the UK, whatever happens with the relationship with Europe and whatever, is still one of the safest places in the world to own property. So, you know, there's a sort of a lot, you can sort of understand it from that sense.
Absolutely. I've been meeting on a regular basis with some high net worth individuals, fund managers and property experts over the last 12 months or so in London, right? And anytime we speak about who's investing and who's putting money into London and buying in London, still, overseas investors want to buy in London.
And with the low pound compared to the dollar, it's great for them, isn't it?
That's helping, you know, regarding the yen and the dollar and, you know, and everything else. They want the security of being in London, and they'd rather choose London than anywhere else. you say to them, oh, the yield's higher if you buy a property, you know, in Watford, you know, in Edinburgh, you know, and they're like, no, we want to buy in and around London. We don't even want to go as far as the M25. You know what I mean? We want to be right in the centre of London as best as we possibly can. We want to be in, you know, in touching distance or see from where we are, you know.
We want to be able to see London Bridge
from, you know, from the property we're buying.
When our plane flies into Heathrow, we want to see what we own.
Absolutely. That's what they want. They want the security because they, it's something about trust and the marquee brand of holding ownership of parts of London.
Yeah.
You see this again with Dejan being taken out. A 56% premium for a sleepy little holding company, Pete.
Do you know what? I'm amazed by that premium. I'm absolutely amazed. I mean, you would have thought they'd have got away with 30% or something, wouldn't you? I mean, that's such a premium. You know,
because the largest entities within the company have got a big chunk of change in there. So, you know...
They wanted a big upside, yeah.
So they know what they've got, and they're not going to let it go easily. And the family have had ownership of that company for quite some time. So, you know.
Oh yeah, that's right. There was a family part, wasn't there? I sort of recognised Dejan because Investors Chronicle have always been very bullish on it. I mean, to be fair to Investors Chronicle, they've been on about it for years. And it really is one of those under the radar stocks. You never see. I don't think I've ever seen anyone on Twitter mention Dejan. I don't think it's ever happened.
It's probably just Lord Lee. I mean,
hopefully a few lucky people have been in it today and had a flipping good day, and they'll be having nice fillet steak and champagne for tea. You know, fair play. I didn't see many people comment on Twitter saying they had it. So
it's because it's too sleepy for them, Pete. They don't want stocks that move 1% a month.
Yeah, it is an incredibly tedious stock on the face of it. And it had something like 2% yield. And I think one of the trouble with property rights and that, one of the psychological problems I have is that if I'm ever owning something like that, I'm looking for 4-5% dividend. I sort of think, what's the point of having it if I'm not getting a nice dividend? So I wouldn't have got overly excited by Dejan, and obviously that would have been a mistake.
Yeah, I'm just looking up.
Hard miss. It's a hard one though, because you know you can understand why I wouldn't have bought it. But there you go.
Yeah. We can't own every single stock, Pete, can we? You
know, we can't get them all right. That's the thing, isn't it?
We can't get them all right. No, the Freshwater family apparently are the largest holders in that company. So they're essentially taking it private themselves. They've got a holding of 71%. So they're basically buying out the other smaller shareholders who have got less than 28% of the company, and taking it private, and no one else will have to share it with anybody else now, will they?
Yeah, it's gone now. Mate, another one that I wanted to mention was that, again, I've been doing a little bit of tidying up with my portfolio, really. That's Galliford Try, GFRD. Yes. Now, that's an interesting situation, because what happened was Galliford Try was, as it was before, was like a house building side, Linden Homes, and a construction side. And the construction side's been nothing but flipping trouble for years. And it's been sort of dragging it down, even though the homes bit was doing okay. And what has happened is the homes bit got sold off to Bovis, BVS, and then Bovis became Vistry. VTY. It's all very complicated.
Yeah.
But the interest, from my point of view, what was interesting about it was that my Galliford Try holding became a little holding in Galliford Try, but it also became quite a sizable holding in VTY. And I sort of thought about it. I thought, well, I'm very happy to keep VTY, the homes bit, and that has been making new all-time highs and looking really good, so I'm happy to keep that. But I was thinking the GFRD rump, I can't really do anything with it. It's like too small to ever really make much difference in my portfolio. I don't necessarily want to be in pure construction anyway, and I certainly wouldn't want to add money to it to make it more meaningful. So I sort of thought, well, it's got no point in my portfolio. So, yeah, it got the boot, basically. It's gone.
Right. I was about to say, Pete, before you sell it, it's been rising of late.
Yeah, well, I sold it pretty much into that rise, was what I was thinking.
Right, okay. But this.
So I sold it a couple of days ago.
All right, okay. But
But
anyone
to be honest, mate,
listening.
I just wanted it out of the way. I just thought this is just distracting me, you know what I mean?
Okay, if anyone listening, one of the things I've been doing, and I've taken this from Lord Lee again, right, is with regards to stuff that becomes so small because of transactional stuff with takeovers and so on and so forth, look at how much it actually costs you to trade that stock. And when I say trade, I mean to exit that stock,
To dump it, yeah.
to dump it. So if the value of what you've left, got left rump wise, is more than £150, say £300, yeah? £500, a grand, right? It costs you £12.50 or £20 to actually go, you know what, I'm getting rid of this.
Yeah.
That then gives you, yeah, minus that £20 transactional fee, monies to pay for running that account on that platform for the year. Right?
Yeah.
So the transactional cost for your trading, if you're a very conservative trader trading 10 times a year, is £200 a year. Yeah, we know some people that do that on a daily basis, right?
Oh,
But
don't,
for
yeah.
others that are investors that are just buying, holding, forgetting, £200 a year, that's a stock that's sitting there that's never going to go back to being worth 2 grand again. Yeah,
Yeah, it's
sell
not
that,
that, yeah.
sell that 200, £300 worth, and let that fund the transactions that are coming into your account. Rather than reducing the amount in your portfolio, yeah, that's being taken from your account.
Yeah, it's a good way of looking at it, isn't
Yeah.
it? Yeah.
So yeah, just leave it there. Leave that 200, £300 to fund when they say, oh, actually, you're due a quarterly payment or an annual payment for this account, for whatever it is, for the size of your account. This is how much it costs. Those little minuscule amounts of three or four stocks you've got
Yeah.
could amount to £1,000 to pay for the whole of your running of the account for that
Oh,
year.
that, yeah. I mean, like for instance, I've got an account with iDealing. That's where my main bulk of my money is. And I think the admin fee on that is like £5 a quarter or something. It's absolutely peanuts. I mean, it's so cheap to run in terms of the admin charge, yeah. And a lot of them, I mean, I think iWeb I've got an account with as well, and that has no admin charge, which is lovely. So some of them, yeah. So you can get accounts that have like incredibly low charges, which is beautiful, obviously. Hey, I was thinking as well, one of the other reasons that I dumped GFRD is that I'm trying to stick to this idea of the WD-40. So it basically means that I hold 40 stocks in my sort of main portfolio. And so if I want to buy something new, even if I've got the cash to do it, if I've still got 40 stocks, then really I can't buy another one. So I have to sell something and free up a slot. So I've then got a slot to buy something new in. So it's partly that was the reason to clear it as well.
I mean, that's a good thing, Pete. Adding a bit of discipline and being consistent, that's
Yeah,
great
I think
because it.
discipline's good. In the past, I used to like quite often have like say 55 stocks in that portfolio. It's just too many, you know. I think it's good to have like, I mean, a lot of people have say 25 or 30 or 20 or something. Do you know what I mean? I think that's a good discipline to do.
It
You have
is.
30, don't you, Pete?
I'm with you in a sense of having a good number of stocks. You know, I'm not a big fan of concentrated portfolios. You know, there's people with less than a dozen stocks,
Oh, so
and
risky. So
they've got
risky.
quite large amounts covering those 12 stocks. And the problem is, when you've got four of those stocks underperforming, the likelihood is that the whole of your portfolio is going to take a bath. And when I say
Yeah.
a bath, you know, if four of those stocks move severely in 1 week, you're down 1, 4, 5% on the portfolio. If that does it over the course of 3 or 4 months, you know, per month, you're looking at a stock that's that your portfolio is down 20, 25%
Very easily, yeah.
very, very easily. So a concentrated portfolio works extremely well with momentum when the markets are going higher
When the
and
time's good.
your selected core stocks are doing extremely well. If your
Yeah.
selected core stocks of 4, 12, 10 are not doing so well, you're going to be severely impacted on a downside. And as we all know, and you've said this before, what if the markets take a hammering tomorrow? Are we prepared? I don't think anyone with a core portfolio is prepared.
Yeah, I mean, we discussed this on a podcast where I said, you've almost got to think, what would you do if the markets fell 50% tomorrow? And it's like if you can basically say now that if the markets fell 50% tomorrow, I want to go and jump off the nearest bridge or something, then you know you're taking on too much risk.
Yeah.
And okay, none of us can cope with 50%. I mean, God, we'd all have a, you know, it'd all be coronaries all around if it fell 50% tomorrow, especially on a Saturday. That would really shock you. That would be like, wow, shit, that was a bit of an unexpected move there by the market. It always throws up something you don't expect. But yeah, I mean, you know, you've got to sort of plan for it because it does happen. You know, was it Black Monday or whatever it was? It's like 33% down in one day or something.
It can happen.
Imagine that. And that was like a FTSE 100. We're not talking small stocks. We're talking big stocks fell 33% in one day.
Any stocks can, mate. And we've seen it happen. I mean, you saw how the market reacted when Apple came out with a warning. It was like, sharp and take a breath, you know. We get so used to a stock or a particular stock going up and keeping going up and keeping going up. And that takes me on to another point, Pete. There are certain groups of people, individuals, that are very, very defensive regarding their stocks.
Mm. Yeah.
And I think it's very important for those listening to this to be mindful of people who can only hear and read positive things about their stocks. Because there's no one stock out there that's going to keep going up, chugging along consistently year in, year out, year in, year out.
There is no perfect stock, is there? Yeah. Every single stock have negative aspects or potentially negative things that could hit it.
Absolutely, without having a blip.
Mm.
You know, so if you see someone that, you know, as soon as their stock is mentioned, they're jumping on and they've never really interacted with you before, or they're constantly having to interact with people that mention that particular stock, because it's had a really, really good run. And they obviously wanted the run to continue. And we saw that before with Vesarion. That was a prime example. The individuals that were in that stock used to be jumping out at everybody regarding that stock. If anyone mentions anything to say, oh, I'm not quite sure why this is doing so well, they'd be there on the defensive all the time. Mm. So we've seen that stock reverse, you know, quite significantly. Where is it going to be from a year from now or 2 years from now? I haven't got a clue. Some people are saying it's going to go to zero. Some people are going to say it's going to be at 2 quid, 5 quid, 10 quid. I really, really don't know.
Nobody knows. But what we do know is that it's not really produced much in the way of revenues and profits and stuff.
It hasn't. I mean, there was a big joke in the city a good few years ago when Delarue bought the printing technology to print money. So the joke was Delarue could print money.
Yeah.
The share price went to the moon, and now it's come back. You know, it's down at I think it's 1.5 quid or something like that now. But this is a stock that was above a tenner at one stage, and everyone was saying this is the best stock to be in.
I mean, Delarue, D-L-A-R, isn't it? D-L-A-R. Yeah. I mean, it's been an absolute pig of a stock for years, really, hasn't it? And obviously, as we move to a cashless society. God, I was just looking. D-L-A-R was up 10.3% today. I'm just looking on my phone on the ADVFN app.
Yeah.
Up 10.3% today, but obviously it had dropped down. Like for last week, it had been down pretty much every day, down, 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 and it's obviously just had a quick bounce today. But I mean, the 1 year chart, the 3 year chart is horrific, mate. It's just horrendous downtrend channel. Why anyone would buy that is absolute mystery to me.
Except for traders.
Someone's
looking in that and thinking there's something left here. There's something, you know, there's some skeleton, there's some bone up, sorry. There's some muscle on the skeleton left. You know, this is a stock that was 11 quid back in 1994. Yeah. And then in 2002 2003 was £1.88. Back up again at 10, nearly 11 quid in 2012. And now we're back down again. And it's been as low as £1 in the past, you know, 52 weeks, and been as high as £4.66. You know, you've got a multi-billion pound company that's now sitting worth £106 million.
I mean, it's interesting because I always sort of feel that, to an extent, quality, established, long-term businesses, they'll go through tough times, and very often, probably, I don't know, 8 times out of 10, whatever, they will recover. But I look at something like Delarue and I think, is that one that's going to recover? And I think it's one that could be at serious risk because its business model is going away from it. Because, you know, we're we are going to a cashless society. Cash will not exist at some point in the future. And they're going to have to make that transition from that into other things, which I think they're starting to do. But whether they're going to be quick enough to make that transition and whether they can survive, I think it'd be very questionable.
Yeah, I've been having a conversation with a good friend of ours, Matt Bird. About tobacco companies. And we've been having this conversation on and off for quite some time. And during that time, I've held both IMB and BATS on and off. I don't hold either of them anymore. But they were the hot stocks, you know, guaranteed income, guaranteed capital growth, blah, blah, blah.
Probably 10 years or more after the credit crunch. By 10 years, they did really well.
You could have had them from the 80s all the way through to 2010s, and they were still doing all right. But the last, from 2017 onwards, they're down 50%.
The
vast majority of them. So anyone buying for income, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6% yield, even with the yield, they're in negative territory on holding that stock for the past 5 years almost. Mm. So I'm saying to myself, is that vape, is that other technology that they're involved in, is it ever going to generate enough revenue to stop these not being loss makers, because they're still making a significant amount of money, but for the shareholders, do the shareholders have an opportunity here to make some money going forward? And they've been struggling, mate.
That's it, isn't it? It's that switch, isn't it? It's like, can they shift their normal fag revenues over to the new vaping kind of world? And when you look at what they've achieved with vaping, I mean, it's still pretty paltry, isn't it, really?
It's paltry, but on top of that, they're still...
They've got a long way to go, haven't they?
They've got a long way to go to replace that significant global sort of income they've got regarding tobacco, smoking it, you know what I mean? And the problem that both of them have got and all the tobacco companies got, there's still historical litigation issues that they still haven't paid for, addressed, that's still there, sitting there waiting to be dealt with.
I think there's also that bigger issue, you know, this issue around ESG, what was it, environmental, sociable and governance. And I think, you know, they're not necessarily seen as a green issue, obviously, but they're very much something that falls into that ethical and governance kind of debate. And it's like, will it be acceptable for fund managers to put money into something like that? It may become that it's just not morally, socially acceptable to invest in those kinds of stocks. And that's a real problem for those stocks.
I think we were speaking probably about a year ago now, Pete, about social responsible investing.
We did. I remember talking about it, yeah.
And at the time then, it was the fastest growing section of investing going on. Yeah. And I think it was something like, let me get this right now. Was it something like 9 cents in every dollar was going into that, which was like biggest, you know, overall for any sector. I haven't looked at that sector recently to see what percentage of the dollars going in there, but it probably is right up there. You know, green investing, ethical investing, whatever you want to call it.
Oh, it really is, yeah.
A lot of companies are having to show green credentials to get in certain benchmarks. You know, and even the likes of Shell and BP are trying to do their best to get in there.
Yeah.
Well, the tobacco company is invariably going to try and do it as well. But the people that know are going to go, I'm still not going to invest in BP or BATS or IBM. Yeah. Oh, IMB, sorry.
There's so much greenwashing going on. It's
greenwashing.
It's almost embarrassing. It? I mean, like you said, it was BP, wasn't it? I think Glencore have also said something about it. You think, it's just a joke. It's like, how on earth can mining operations be, you know? And what was the other one? Ryanair and some of the airlines and stuff.
Really?
They're all saying, oh, we're going to be green. Maybe it isn't. Maybe it was EasyJet, where they're all going, oh, we're going to be green. But they're talking about net green. So what they're really doing is they're flying their planes today and chucking all this crud out, right? But then on the other hand, they're like investing in some forests that aren't actually going to grow for like 3 or 4 or 5 years or whatever. So, I mean, so it's like you're going to kill the planet today, but don't worry, because like 10 years time, it's going to be all loads of forests everywhere. I mean, it's just nonsense. So, anyway.
It is a worry. Right, Pete, we've covered a few stocks. I wanted to mention to folk to keep an eye out for, and we're giving you notice. We're going to say this now. That,
you're on notice. You're on notice. That's it. You're on notice.
You're on notice.
Not a bad way.
Let me backtrack a little bit. Firstly, everyone, thank you ever so much for all of your fantastic feedbacks that we've had since Christmas. Everyone seems to be
coming
out of the woodwork and recognizing the what we've been doing on this podcast, and we're loving it, guys, girls.
Yeah,
ladies,
really appreciate it. Thank you
really,
so much.
Really appreciate it. So
it's been absolutely amazing. Yeah, so pleased
For the feedback, and because of all of you individuals that have been listening, we're going to be taking this podcast up another notch in the next couple of weeks. We've got a couple of surprises in store for all of you. So whether you're listening in the Ukraine or Mauritius or Bristol
or in Russia, was it? I mentioned.
Don't say that word, Pete. Or Canada, you know, we've seen some of the stats that we've got are really fantastic. So thank you ever so much for wherever you're listening. We really appreciate that you continue to support us.
Funny enough,
we have got a few more developments for you over the next couple of weeks. We're hoping to make a significant sort of announcement at some stage, but we can't say much until we've dotted the I's, crossed the T's, and got everything else done. So we just want to make you guys aware that we're getting to where we're getting to because of your support. So thank you ever so much for that.
Absolutely. I just want to say that I think, am I right in saying this will be podcast 17? It will be,
this
won't
is
it?
Podcast 17.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to say, podcast 16, I mean, we are just stunned by the response to that podcast. I mean, it's been massively by far our most successful in terms of number of listeners. So thank you so much for really getting behind us. And it's just been brilliant.
Yeah, thank you ever so much. So Pete and I will probably be, I'm not sure if I'll be working at the show, but I'll be at the Master Investor Show on the 28th of March.
Yeah, I'm going. Yeah, I'll be
Pete's
there.
Pete's usually there. He's usually
in the canteen.
In the cafe, which is convened for himself and his large cohort of friends and, I'd say, family, Twitter community.
Friends and family. Twitter family. Yeah.
Usually between 5 and 105. Surrounding Pete and the table, discussing all manner of things in stocks and shares. So the Master Investor Show has got a sub-cohort, smaller show called the Wheelie Dealer Show.
Play a show within a show.
Show within the show. However, Pete and I will be at Mellow Invest. We've been kindly invited to Mellow's show in Chiswick, London, on the 19th, 20th and 21st of May. That's in Chiswick, London.
Yeah.
I think there's still some early bird tickets using the code TWIT50.
Yeah, TWIT50, wouldn't it? It was 50% off. You'd have to be quick, I think.
You have to be very quick. I think it was down to the last 20 or 30. Yeah. And that will save you, well, obviously 50% of the price for the tickets. But Pete,
it's
and
a good
I,
deal, though, isn't it? Because to get that off on Mellow is flipping
absolutely,
excellent.
Absolutely, absolutely brilliant. So if at the moment, Pete and I are looking and hoping to organise with David Streder, who's kindly invited us, to do another live podcast at the show. We're hoping to organise that for one of those 3 days. And probably on the other 2 days, I'll be working. But Pete will definitely be there. On the Thursday. I'm not sure about the Fridays yet, Pete, are you?
Yeah, and I'll only be there on the Thursday. The trouble is with my health and that, I can't really do, you know, a couple of days on the trot, but I'll be there on the Thursday.
Okie dokie. So, Pete, you wanted to tell us a little bit about the Senko show, the show.
Better just mention that quickly.
Just briefly, because we're 40 odd minutes in now, mate, so go ahead.
Yeah, no, we'll just run for it quickly. All it was, I had the delightful day out. When was it? It must have been last week. Went up to the Shares Magazine / Chenkos Innovation Growth and Innovation Forum, I think it's called. It's on like every year, and it's a free event, and it's really very good. And went along there, met up with loads of people that I know. Well, lots of people I know as old mates from long time back, but also people I know through Twitter and stuff. Met up with loads of people. It was really good fun. And we went to the restaurant next door afterwards, and that was really cool. And a bit of beer was drunk by a few people and things like that, mentioning no names. I had a really good day. But one of the things I was going to mention was that I managed to speak to Water Intelligence, WATR, which I actually hold a few shares in. And I'm toying with the idea of buying more, but I'm sort of like biding my time at the moment and tracking it. But what I liked about that one is that up until now, they've done all their stuff mainly in America, because they own this division called American Leak Detection, where they use ultrasound and stuff to send signals down a pipe to work out where blockages are and where leaks are, which is quite sort of clever tech. So it means you don't need to dig your drive up to find where there's a leak in your pipe. So they've been doing that in America, and it's been going really successful. What they're looking to do is to take that over to more in the UK, more in Australia, more in, I think it's South Africa, to try and replicate the model they've got in the US over here as well. But the other thing they're doing is that they've developed the same product, because at the moment that's only on like clean water, yeah, like your tap water. They've now adapted the product to work on your wastewater pipes. So it's very similar stuff. I mean, yeah, so it's clever stuff, and they're going to do that as well. So, you know, and there's a lot going on at water. I won't talk any more about it here because of the time issues, but it's definitely a very interesting business. The other one I wanted to mention was Duke, D-U-K-E, which is Duke Royalty. I had a long chat with them as well. I don't hold shares in these. I'm interested in them, and I've been interested for some time, and there's a lot to like. And it's unusual because it's sort of like a company that lends money to other companies, yeah. But instead of being a normal loan, it's actually done like a royalty. So as the company that is the royalty partner, as their revenues go up over time, they will pay more money to Duke as a result of that sort of thing. So in a way, Duke grows with them if they grow their revenues. Which is quite a clever model. But that one's quite interesting because it's a very high dividend. It's like 6% dividend or something. And it's a growing dividend, you know, and they've been around for a couple of years now on the markets and sort of like proven that it sort of works. The thing that I need to check before I would invest in them is I want to have a better look at the actual companies that they've got money in. You know, there's some interest to me. They've got, you know, like Pearl and Dean, yeah?
Yes.
The cinema. Right, mate, we've had so many
That's
requests.
When I first started to go to the cinema, Pete, Pearl and Dean.
Oh, man, there you go.
Yes,
yeah, mate. Yeah, that's it. Was it? Yeah, that's the one, yeah.
That's the one.
Wow. So, Pearl and Dean, so, yeah, and they've also got another one that does like caravans and horse boxes and stuff, something like accessories for caravans and things like that. Which is quite established businesses. There's quite a few sort of interesting little things. And a ferry company they do. So that's, yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, it's quite an interesting...
That's quite diverse. Why did I think it was to do with mining or oil or something like that?
Aha.
Is this what everyone else is thinking? Is it just me? Well,
there's a good reason for this, mate. It's
okay,
because...
Go on.
Duke is very unique on the market because I think it's the only company listed on the markets that does royalties for what I would call normal companies, yeah? Ah. There is another one, which is Anglo-Pacific APF.
I know that one. I've had that
which
before.
Is another interesting business, which yeah. does mining royalties.
Yes,
that one is just about mining things, and it, and obviously as the coal producer or whatever produces more coal,
yes.
then they get more royalty, yeah.
I remember that. So let me just interject here, Pete. So Duke Royalty doesn't invest or have any holdings that are resources related?
I don't think so.
You just ticked the box for me, because that level of income for me, slow, steady, boring, leave it alone, forget about it, that's ticked a box. I'll do some research over the weekend.
Yeah, it's an interesting little company, I think.
Okay. All right.
I think that probably covers a good load. I don't know if there's anything else.
Because we might not talk about this stock again before Mellow.
Yeah.
Before Master Investor Show. I want you to mention Mellow because in May of last year, I think it was May of last year.
Yeah, May was the last Mellow show, yeah.
I think it was May of last year. I was asked to speak about a stock And I spoke about a stock right at the very end. Someone was asking myself and two others what stocks we had that people could go and do some research on, because I never recommend or tip shares.
Yeah.
And I asked and I spoke about a stock called Reach PLC.
RCH, yeah.
RCH, we mentioned on here before, which used to be Trinity Mirror back in the day.
Yeah.
So Reach PLC is the largest national and regional newspaper publisher, and it does business solutions for other companies, marketing and branding. So the Scottish Daily Record, OK Magazine, you know, New South Wales Echo, and, you know, all the other little regional papers, Manchester Evening News, Daily Mirror, so on and so forth, all those sort of papers.
Yeah.
So I said to people, yeah, I'm interested in this, and this is a stock to go and do some research on. It was 75 pence per share at the time.
Today, I'm looking at the chart now. The one-year chart is stunning. Well done,
it's,
mate.
It's gone up. Today, I'm not sure what the news is. I don't think there's any news.
It's up 5% today.
It's up another 5% at £1.74.6. Now, you know, for anybody out there that's thinking, oh, let me go and have a look at that, and let me go and buy some on Monday, please consider the fact that it's already gone up a silly amount. I'm not tipping it. I'm just saying that with good research, you can get in early enough to get in the stock. Do your research beforehand, yeah, and be one of the people that gets a stock before anyone else does. There is a situation this week with a stock of mine called Ixico, and Ixico has gone up a silly amount again, yeah? And
IXI, isn't it?
IXI.
Which we've spoken about before.
We've spoken about before.
But yeah.
And it's been getting an uplift from when after I purchased it from Simon Thompson. Yeah, so Simon Thompson started tipping. I bought at 26 and a bit pence. Simon Thompson started talking about it at 33 pence, and he carried on talking about it, and he carried on talking about it, and the share price just kept on rising. Unfortunately, for those that got in quite late, Simon Thompson came out and said, I think actually it's a bit pricey right now, at 84 pence. And subsequently, you know, the same momentum that he added to the stock, the stock has now rolled over slightly and has gone down from that price, touched 68 pence this week within 2 days of Simon Thompson saying, nah, I think it's pricey now at 84, 85 pence.
It shows the power he's got, doesn't it?
It shows the power he's got, but it also shows to be mindful that when a stock goes up quite a lot from really good upgrades, and also other analysts, pundits, well-known individuals are talking about it, that it can do the same in the reverse.
Yeah.
So I was trying to explain to people what negative volume means. So you see the share price moving downwards, and obviously sometimes the volume is quite high. So I look at the 90-day average volume. Now, on the 2 days that Ixico was going down, the volume was 3-4 times that amount. That, to me, is negative volume. When the share price is going up, and the volume,
because it's got a lot of volume going down.
That's called, for me, positive volume.
Yeah.
Yeah. So be mindful of looking at the volume, seeing that the volume's high, and not relating it to where the price movement is. Is the price movement positive or negative? If it's positive, that's positive volume. If it's negative, that's negative volume. And sometimes that negative volume can carry on and carry on until the shares hit a base. Has Ixico hit a base at 68 pence? I don't know. All I know is that dozens of people were coming onto Twitter saying, I bought the dip at 67 pence, 68 pence, sorry, 72 pence, 73 pence. I'm thinking, well, good luck to you. I don't know where the bottom is. Yeah. I've been purchased it at 26 and a bit pence, and it going up to 90 pence nearly. I don't know where it's going to go from here, but I'm a long-term holder of the stock. I've trimmed
some. Yeah, because ultimately you think it might go even higher than 80-90p, but it could take a long time, and it could dip a long way before it gets there, you know, en route sort of thing.
Absolutely. And this is
because they can go about, all over the place.
This is the thing about bearing in mind that nothing goes up in a straight line. And this is what I'm saying about some stocks that people are very defensive about. I'm not defensive about Ixico. It'll go up, it'll go down. I've got a view that long term it'll do okay because of the niche that they're in. If it goes back down to 20 pence, then I'll be scratching my head going, I got it completely wrong. You know, all I'll be thinking, well, here's an opportunity to buy some more. But I don't know where it's going to go. Yeah, but certain people on Twitter regarding the stocks that they hold dear or they've got too much money invested in, they know exactly what's going to happen to that stock. They have a crystal ball regarding that stock. I don't have a crystal ball about any of my stocks. I can't tell you what's going to happen in the future. And what I'm trying to say to you is no one can tell you what's going to happen to that stock or any stock in the future.
It's impossible
don't believe
to know,
them.
Yeah, it's impossible to know.
So what do you want to close on, Pete?
Well, I think we've pretty much wrapped most of it up. What we must mention is thank you to everybody who's subscribed to the channels. And just mention that it's worth subscribing, because then as soon as new podcasts come out, you get told about it. From your platform sort of thing, it will tell you that there's new ones on there and stuff.
Absolutely. And just keep giving us the feedback, the good, the bad, the indifferent. You know, we're learning still. We're learning how to invest. We're learning how to research stocks. We're learning how to do this podcast. And we've got it to the level that we've got it to because of your feedback, your help and your support. If you're liking this podcast, subscribe. If you're liking it, share it with some friends that you know.
Even if you don't like it, subscribe.
retweet it. Show the love. Retweet it. Give us some feedback. You know, we're ready for it. So just thank you ever so much for continuing to listen to the Twin Peaks Investing. And we hope to take this. We will be taking this to another level because of your support. So
oh, yeah. As I keep saying on Twitter, we're here to stay. You know, I mean, hopefully me and Peter Age are going to live to be 130, and we'll be doing TPI podcasts for all that time.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Something like that.
All right, ladies and gents, thank you ever so much. This is me, Peter Higgins at Conkers 3, and Peter at Wheelie Dealer on Twitter, signing off. See you soon. Take care.
Thank you. God bless. See you later. Bye.
Have a great weekend. Look after yourselves. Look after your families. And be kind to each other. Take care. God bless.
Cheers.